This is Mike Valentine from the Strobance Cardiovascular Center at Centra in Lynchburg, Virginia, and currently incoming president of the American College of Cardiology. I'll be your host for the podcast series, Practice Made Perfect, a new featuring with in-depth conversations with experts on topics related to career and leadership development necessary for young cardiovascular professionals to succeed in the changing healthcare landscape. Join us as we explore these critical subjects of non-clinical competencies in the weeks to come.
Hi, and welcome. Thanks for joining us for ACC's Practice Made Perfect. This podcast is going to actually come to you in two sections. The first section that we're going to cover evolved around the fascinating world that we live in, as we lovingly refer to it, our value environment. We're going to look at how we can transition our care in this value environment and try to understand the infrastructure that we all are living in and how that actually impacts physician compensation, which will be our second topic of conversation. So welcome to the podcast. My name is Kathy Biga. I work in Chicago with about 60 providers. So managing this trend, this environmental trend that we're in, is indeed challenging for all of us. So let's try to look back and see exactly how this occurred and why it's happening. Our movement to value really hasn't just happened. It's been ongoing for a while. And it actually dates back to the Health and Human Service mandate that occurred in 2015. This is a very interesting mandate that came out of Congress. And what it basically said was, we need to move away from a fee-for-service basis, which is how we all operate, right? You do an EKG, you interpret an EKG, you bill for an EKG, you do an echo, you bill for an echo. So that fee-for-service world really did incent quantity, not that we didn't do it in a quality way, but it really did provide payment in a fee-for-service world. Well, in 2015, the Health and Human Service said there's a mandate that we're going to look at that between now, 2015, and 2018, we want to move all of our billing component to a value world. We want each of our CPTs that we bill to be tied to some type of quality. Now, this will be very familiar to most of you who are listening. That was the original PQRS. Most of us are very familiar with how PQRS worked. We do clicks in our clinic in order to collect this quality data that then gets transitioned to Washington. We also found in 2015 an evolution happening, primarily in the private payer world, but starting in the Medicare world as well. This was a tie to value for your insurance payment. And what the Health and Human Service mandate said was that by the end of 2016, we want 30% of our patients, Medicare patients specifically, in a non-fee-for-service, or as they refer to it, an alternative payment model. And by the end of 2018, well, that's where we're at right now, right? By the end of 2018, they want us to be at 50% of all Medicare beneficiaries to be in an alternative payment model. So think about this. How many of your patients that you just saw today are actually in a non-fee-for-service world? Are 50% of them there? Well, in reality, we are finding that many of our Medicare beneficiaries are indeed transitioning from that fee-for-service basis. So that was 2015. What happened in 2015 in addition to this Health and Human Service mandate? Well, what happened was this little thing called MACRA. It's an acronym, M-A-C-R-A, which is now called QPP. So lots of acronyms in our world, but you probably have heard of MACRA. It stood for the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act. That's quite a mouthful. And it was, of course, an acronym within an acronym, so that's why they changed it to Quality Payment Programs. The Quality Payment Program, or MACRA, was passed in 2015. It was a bipartisan act out of Congress that kind of pulled both aisles of Congress together. Very, very interesting, unlike anything we've really seen in our government, because it passed by a pretty significant margin. What most people thought was that the passage of MACRA was, in fact, the reduction or the elimination of the SGR. Now, some of you may not even be aware of the SGR, but the SGR, which stands for Sustainable Growth Rate, was something that we all had to live with every year for physician payment. So the critical thing to remember about QPP or MACRA is that it was a physician payment reform bill. Most of us just thought, well, finally we've gotten rid of SGR. But embedded in this MACRA bill was a dramatic change in how physicians were going to be compensated. So you can see how many of you have ever heard of MACRA, how many of you are really dealing with the quality payment programs within your practice. We're still finding a number of physicians really are not aware of this. So let's try to keep this simple. When QPP was passed, there were two arms to QPP. One arm was called MIPS, M-I-P-S. That stands for the Merit Improvement Performance Systems. And the other arm was called Alternative Payment Models. Now remember, we just talked about that Health and Human Service mandate that said, hey, wait, everybody in America, we want to move away from fee-for-service and we want to go into alternative payment models. So MACRA gave us a path to do that. So on January 1st of 2017, MACRA started its implementation process. Now, did we all stand around going, wow, isn't this great? It's January 1st, we have to pick which arm we're in. We're going to be in the MIPS arm or we're going to be in the APM arm. Well, no, in reality, that did not happen. It was much more insidious than that. So we're going to take these one by one. We're going to take the MIPS arm, then we're going to take the alternative payment arm and sort of set the stage for our physician compensation. So we talked about the basics of MACRA. We talked about the fact that it utilizes data from 2017 and it will be implemented in 2019. So that's January 1st that it gets implemented. So your data from last year will determine some of your payment rates for 2019. So very, very important. We don't have time in this podcast to go through the entire MACRA QPP plan, but you'll find on acc.org several webcasts that sort of talk you through the actual components. And you'll also see the slides that we put together for Practice Made Perfect that will outline some of these key elements for you. So let's just take these one at a time. We'll take MIPS first, and then we'll take the alternative payment model. MIPS, the merit improvement, let's view that as the quality side of what we do day in and day out. So as we said, the data collection started in 2017. We'll try to keep this simple. MIPS is composed of four categories. Those four categories are quality, advancing care information, which many of us know as meaningful use, but hold on, they decided to change that name too. It's now called interoperability, so it has a name, but we'll call it meaningful use so we don't get confused. Improvement activities is the third, and cost is the fourth. There are 100 points that are available to every physician and advanced practice practitioner. So this includes not only our physicians, but also our advanced practice practitioners. For the 2017 data, those 100 points were distributed like this. There were 60 points for quality. There were 25 points for advancing care information. There were 15 points for improvement activity. And for this first year of MIPS, they scored cost at zero. That was very nice of them. But this is moving quickly. So 2018, and we're halfway through 2018, those four categories are now distributed like this. There will be 50 points for quality, 25 points for advancing care information, 15 points still for your improvement activity, and cost is now 10 points. So you can see we're starting to evolve into this new world where cost and quality become a tandem operation. We need to think of them both very similarly. Now, there's lots and lots of things we could digress and perhaps go down rabbit holes as we talk about MIPS, but I only want you to talk about two specific components of MIPS. One of those is in order to help you prepare for MIPS, there is a report card that every tax ID gets once a year. It's called the QRUR. Yes, another acronym. That QRUR stands for Quality Resource and Utilization Report. It actually serves as a roadmap for MIPS. Now, this is where we could go down a lot of rabbit holes, but we're going to try to keep it simple. If you happen to work in a large multi-specialty group that bills under one tax ID number, your QRUR will be multi-specialty driven. It will have information for all of your colleagues, your primary care colleagues, your orthopedic colleagues, whoever is in your multi-specialty group will be included in that QRUR. So that does make things a little bit complicated. If you're listening to this and you're in a solo cardiology group or a small cardiology practice, or even one of our larger solo specialty practices, your QRUR may be perceived as a little bit more helpful because it will give you both your cost and your quality data that you can use to help drive your MIPS score. So that QRUR is an important piece of data for you to use. It will also be more important as cost continues to increase in the component of MIPS. As we said, our 2018 data has 10% of cost right now. There are some pedundants that think that that will go up to 30% next year. Now, we won't know until the fee schedules come out, which is only 4 to 6 weeks away, so we won't have to wait too long for this question to be answered. But we do have to keep an eye on it, because the plan when MACRA was passed back in 2015 was that cost and quality would equilibrate, meaning that they would be worth the same value. So we do believe in the not-too-distant future, both cost and quality will equal 30% of your MIPS score. So you can see how very, very important it is. Now, there's one other thing that I want to mention before we move away from MIPS, and that's the incredible importance of your day-to-day documentation as it relates to all of these programs. You'll notice on ACC.org, we actually did a webcast on risk scoring. Now, you say to yourself, oh, my Lord, why is she going to talk about risk scoring today? I was so enjoying this talk on MIPS. Well, the reason we really need to talk about your risk score is many of you are used to it in the hospital setting. You have your clinical documentation people that sort of chase after you and they ask for queries, and you may have heard Linda describe it a little bit in her podcast regarding coding and documentation. It was very common in the hospital world because of our DRG methodology of payment. Being specific in your diagnosis was very important in the hospital. Well, it's now equally important in the office, because every one of these programs, not only Medicare, but also our private payers, rely on how well you document for risk scores. Every Medicare beneficiary has a risk factor that they come to see you in your office with every year. So again, all I want to say is be very careful with your documentation. The QRUR will actually list your tax ID or your group's risk score, so very important. The QRUR will actually divide it by patient level detail, so you can actually see what some of your Medicare beneficiaries are and what kind of risk score they have. And so you say to yourself, well, how in the world can I influence my risk score? I'm only going to have you two homework lessons. Number one, effective today, and if you're listening during your lunchtime, when you go back to clinic this afternoon, I want you to never use an unspecified diagnosis again. Just take it out of your vernacular. Don't use unspecified codes. That's number one. Number two is I want you to list as many codes, diagnoses specifically, that you entertained as you took care of your patient for their visit with you today. I want you to list as your first diagnosis how sick that patient was. How specific can you make that ICD-10 for me? And you will see an amazing difference. You'll notice in the slide deck that's accompanying this, you will see some very specific examples in slide 21 and 22 may help you focus on understanding risk scoring. Again, something that is a little bit beyond our podcast today, but I did want to make sure that I identified it. You'll also notice in the accompanying slide deck that we actually went through the four categories of MIPS. And again, those were cost, quality, improvement activity, and meaningful use, and gives you kind of the highlights so you know what types of things Medicare is looking at as it relates to MIPS. So that's the MIPS part of MACRA. So next part of MACRA, as we said, is that other arm, which is called alternative payment arm. And that gets a little bit more complicated, but also sets the stage for our talk on physician compensation. Because alternative payment models are called lots of different things. Maybe some of you are used to hearing them called accountable care organizations, or ACOs. Some of you may be familiar with Medicare shared savings programs, which come in different tracks, 1, 1+, 2, 3. Those are all different mechanisms that we are trying to do in our environment today to move us away from a fee-for-service world into paying for totality of care across that continuum of a patient, from diagnosis all the way to post-acute care. So that impact of post-acute care becomes very, very important. Many of our cardiology patients, we sort of stopped thinking about them as they left our office, perhaps, or we discharged them from the hospital. What's happened since the passage of MACRA is really trying to look at patients across that much longer continuum, specifically in that post-acute care time. So why are we talking about the alternative payment models? Because the reality is physician compensation is tied to how money comes into either the hospital who's employing you or your independent group or your physician-owned multi-specialty group. The reality is our compensation is driven by our revenue streams. So it's very, very important to understand how alternative payment models really fit into our physician compensation component. The other part that's important to understand is how MIPS fits in with the alternative payment models, because we said many cardiologists are probably in the MIPS arm of MACRA or QPP. They're just sitting in that quality component. But we have some that straddle both MIPS and alternative payment models. And you'll notice that on slide 35 in the slide deck, if you get a chance to review the slide deck later on, you'll see that it's kind of what we call the third bucket, that if you're in an alternative payment model, perhaps you will need to meet those requirements as it relates to quality and cost in addition to some of the MIPS. So it's not that you're eliminated from MIPS, it's that you have to kind of meet the rules of both. Very complex, right? You're probably sitting there going, oh my goodness, how do I keep all this straight? And that's why you have your administrative dyads and your administrative colleagues to sort of help you understand this. Our goal in Practice Made Perfect is to make sure you're aware of these trends so that you know where to go for these questions and answers, hopefully, that we can give you. So again, to keep it sort of simple, in QPP, we have the two arms, MIPS and alternative payment models. If you're not in any type of an alternative payment model, like a Medicare Shared Savings or a Pioneer or a NextGen, then you know you have to meet all the requirements of MIPS. And if you don't, there will be a penalty. The first penalty will be assessed starting January 1st of 19. That penalty will be assessed based on your performance in 2017. So the data we're collecting right now in 2018 is very important because it will impact whether you get a penalty or not in 2020. And those penalties are increasing, 4% in 2019, 5% in 2020. So it is real important to understand those rules. Let's just go back for one more second into alternative payment models. Let's say that you are in perhaps a Medicare Shared Savings, but you're in just track one, which has no downside risk. That means that you will be in that middle bucket. You'll have some MIPS requirements and alternative payment requirements, but you are not in what they call a qualifying alternative payment model. Now, why would you want to be in a qualifying alternative payment model, such as a Pioneer or NextGen or Track 1 Plus or Track 2 or Track 3 in Medicare Shared Savings? The reason many physicians want to be in that alternative payment arm of MIPS is because there's a 5% bonus that gets tied to that. Why is that? Because looking at the alternative payment models, they're looking at payment for a patient across a continuum, including 60, 90 days post-acute care, as they call it. So you can see we're trying to have physicians lead this charge in payment reform by taking care of patients in a different way, a non-fee-for-service way. So what does that really mean? Two things in conclusion. One, you need to really look at your practice to see if you're QPP ready. Are you ready to take care of episodes of care? Do we even know what episodes of care are? How do I know if I'm QPP ready? Well, you'll find that in the slide deck. My personal opinion is it needs to be physician-led. You need to have a dyad administrator that understands the complexity of these programs. You need to make sure that you are successful in the old PQRS program, the old meaningful use program, and that you know what your QRUR report says, that you understand your number. You are working as an organization with your colleagues to reduce the unnecessary variability in care. That's how this will drive the system. We need to understand that interrelationship between cost and finance. So I hope this podcast has helped you. I hope it's given you an infrastructure for understanding how the value world is evolving. And we're going to talk in the next podcast about physician compensation, but I'm going to leave you with two very interesting questions. What if your compensation was tied to your average risk score? How would that change how you practice? And should compensation be tied to your ability as a provider to manage post-acute care costs? And do you as a physician really feel that you have the ability to impact all of this MACRA and QPP, or do you feel like you're just drowning in administrative burden? Hopefully, Practice Made Perfect podcast will facilitate understanding these non-clinical competencies that have become so very, very important. And the college is pleased to bring this to you, and we hope that you enjoyed this podcast on the movement from volume to value. Thanks very much, and have a great day.
This is Mike Valentine, host of the podcast series, Practice Made Perfect. Thanks for joining us today, and please remember to join us online at acc.org or wherever you get your podcasts, where you can find all the other episodes in this series. In addition, acc.org has additional tools and resources, such as slides and articles, which will help you navigate these complicated topics. They should be easy for you to find and easy for you to use. Thank you again.